I'm Brian McCreath. I'm at Symphony Hall with Truls Merk, who is here with the Boston Symphony. It's been a little while, but Truls, welcome back to Boston. It's good to have you here.
Thank you so much.
You're playing the Haydn First Cello Concerto, and you know, I'll tell you that my background is in trumpet, and so we have our own Haydn Concerto. It's one that gets requested of us a lot, and I wonder if that's the same with this concerto for you. Is the First Cello Concerto by Haydn one of the most requested of the concertos you play?
It is actually very much played, and it's funny to think that it was discovered in 1960, and it was thought to be lost. Haydn has noted writing 6 cello concertos, where only 2 is actually played and found. So, but it was a fabulous, lucky find, this concerto. It fills in an important place in the repertoire. And if you look at the concerto, it's a kind of revolution. It's for the cello. It's written around 1760s. It's very early, and at that time all the previous works for cello as a solo instrument was all in the bass register. And if you think of all the more popular solo instruments, they are high pitch instruments like violin, trumpets, and etc. So the cello took a huge step by actually being able to play in a higher register, and that was thanks to using the thumb, which was previously not used.
So the thumb,
yeah. Oh. So when that happened, that must have been around the very time when Haydn wrote this concerto. Then that changed the game for the cello in a way, because suddenly it could compete with violin and other solo instruments.
That's really fascinating. This concerto has more in common with the Haydn trumpet concerto than I even realized, because it was due to the technical advance in the instrument and the ability to play chromatically.
Yeah.
So I did not know this about the cello concerto. That's fantastic.
Yes, and it's tremendously difficult. It must have been some fabulous cellist in Haydn's nearby or in the orchestra. One spoke so much about the D major concerto being such a huge contributor to the cello as a solo instrument, and that was so difficult. But this is like almost 30 years earlier, and it is also very difficult and very advanced in its writing for cello.
So this is not a piece then that your typical student cellist would take on as an exercise to kind of get up to speed. This is one you wait to play until well on in your advanced playing.
Well, I think that's also students do play it for sure. It is I think one of the most wonderful early works of Haydn in general. It's from the period of Sturm und Drang, this kind of very emotional and very innovative style, and it's very lively. It is has this beautiful catching tunes, and it is really a masterful piece.
So when you see it come up on your schedule, whether it's your manager that tells you, well, you're going to do the Haydn with Boston or something like that, what does it tell you in your mind that you will be doing? Like what does it tell you to be prepared for compared to something like the Dvorak or one of the other romantic concertos? What is it that you have to be prepared for with the Haydn? What are the greatest challenges of it?
Well, it is technically very demanding. It has a high speed. It's motorically challenging. And of course, the style itself is very much lighter in the texture around you as well. So it's very transparent. And all the small things with the phrasings, articulations, and all of these things are very important to make the music come alive. So that is among the challenges that is special, maybe, for playing.
Yeah. And tell me about your early days as a cellist. What was it that drew you to the instrument in the first place?
Well, I think, you know, I come from a musical family. My father was a cellist, my mother a pianist, and there was always music around. In my young years, I was singing in a boys' choir. And I guess that I love the sound of the cello. I had it in my ears since I was born. So I guess the songfulness, the expressiveness, and the register, which is basically the human voice register.
Yeah, yeah. And what do you think your father makes or made of your career as it developed? I mean, you have this international career, and I wonder what that really... what that meant to him.
Well, I guess that he was joking about when I was practicing as a young boy, you know, don't practice too much because you will end up as a musician. But I think he was pleased how it worked out. I hope so.
Do you think it's because he just knows how hard it is to make a living as a musician?
Yes, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, right, right. Well, tell me about a particular time that I guess I understand was almost 10 years ago when you had to stop playing the cello. There was a medical condition, I think it was, that caused you to have to stop. And I don't know the whole story, but I understand that there was some question whether you would be able to play again. And I wonder how difficult that was and what it was that helped you through it and then come back to be the cellist that you now are.
Well, it's a very long story, so I don't go into detail about
sure.
it. But I got some great help recovering. And at that time, I was just thinking, I'll see how far I can get, you know, if my arm would work again and so on. So eventually, it was a very positive period in some way, because for once in my life, I actually had a lot of people around me that that cared a lot about how things were developing. You know, there is a special facility in Oslo called Olympic Team Place. It's for sports people, but they allowed me in there. And they have doctors, they have physiotherapists, they have psychologists, they have everything. And they all work together. And they all sit down and they say, what can we do now? What is the best plan? And so on. And they make you think ahead and see, okay, if we do this and this, maybe this could be possible in them. So I think that was actually a period I learned a lot from and turned out to be a very nice time.
Well, and I guess it makes me wonder when you think about the way that musicians are educated and the way that they're brought up. You know, I've always kind of thought about the comparison to Olympic athletes, for instance, who almost by a rule start incredibly young at their sport. And yet you're right, they're surrounded by psychologists and physiotherapists and coaches, and musicians don't really get that in the same way. I don't know, does it make you think about how musicians are brought up and raised?
Very much so. I was thinking about that, you know, when all my career I've been totally on my own, and even, you know, with all the work, everything, it's just something you do on your own, and all the challenges, traveling and performing and being nervous, and all of these things is something that each of us we are used to coping on our own. But to see how they actually work together as team and try to also the other athletes and so on, they are training together, they are having a social unity there that's very supportive and wonderful. So sure, that was something I was thinking about.
yeah. And I imagine there's at some point you've intersected with Herbert Blomstedt before. Tell me about working with him and what it is that Herbert Blomstedt brings to a concert like this and an experience working on the Haydn with you.
Yeah, he's so wonderful. I don't know where to start. I mean, his whole spirit around him is so encouraging for making music, and he's has this positive energy coming from him all the time. I feel always very privileged as a soloist when I can work with him.
Yeah. Jules Murek, thank you so much for a little bit of your time today. And thanks for being here in Boston to play some Haydn for us. It's just wonderful to hear. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.